some mainstream media would like you to believe that this would be to weaken Russia. Then there are those who have said that the U.S. arms manufacturers are reaping the benefits of massive arms sales, hence profits. But there's a possible sinister U.S. plot behind all of this. First, let's go back to the year 2014, and possibly even before that. NATO, led by the U.S., kept inching towards the Russian borders. Even as the war broke out in 2014 between Ukraine and Crimea, NATO continued its eastward expansion, all the while provoking Russia. Well, after numerous attempts for resolving this matter diplomatically, like the Normandy Initiative, Russia felt an existential threat and decided the time had come to execute a special military operation. That was enough for the war with Ukraine to officially kickstart, along with the most severe sanctions to be placed against Russia, from the United States to the EU. This was meant to paralyze Russia's economy and its source of income. Needless to say, European gas prices began shooting through the roof, as you can see over here, based on what you're looking at from the year 2012, and of course, inching up to the year 2022. Obviously, what this meant is that Russia was being squeezed. Well, in the meantime, Russia had not closed off the main source of gas supplies to the EU. And just when it appeared Russia was ready to open the valve, as it's said, even to reach this capacity of gas for Europe, then boom, the Nord Stream pipeline, it was sabotaged, a final nail in the EU gas supply coffin. Well, as a result, factories in the EU, especially those that consumed the most energy, such as steel, fertilizer, and feedstocks, began to rethink their income strategy. Some of the companies at this point and factories have decided to relocate and move to the U.S. due to cheaper gas prices. These are major factories. So for Europe, that's a very harsh deal. Good for the U.S., though, since this would add to U.S. economic growth and consequently create jobs in the process. Another reason to make sure this process would occur, the Inflation Reduction Act. In short, it's an act passed by the U.S., which would invest $369 billion over 10 years into energy and climate programs, and it would provide a number of tax credits and incentives to promote clean energy technologies. This was something European companies and factories could not resist. But Europe may be waking up to this U.S. plot. The headline brings us to Germany, where its leader and top CEOs arrived in Beijing just a few days ago, as of the recording of this program. They need China more than ever. Not a scenario that the U.S. expected, and something that the U.S. obviously does not like, which can be construed as a slap in the face of the U.S. That's right. Well, we figured best to turn now to Ben Norton from Multipolarista. Now, he's a guest who has been featured in this program to tell us how this may be a possible EU turnaround when it comes to the Ukraine conflict in a message to the U.S.
I wrote about this in an article at Multipolarista.com. I'll link to it in the description below. These comments from the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, really shows how this neoliberal phase of capitalism was predicated on subordinating China and Russia to U.S. imperialism.
I think that the Europeans were facing a situation in which we suffer the consequences of a process that has been lasting for years, in which we have decoupled the sources of our prosperity from the sources of our security. This is a sentence to provide a headline. And I'm taking that from Oliver Schmidt, who has been developing this thesis, I think, quite well. Our prosperity has been based on cheap energy coming from Russia, Russian gas, cheap and suppose affordable and secure and stable, which has been proved not the case, and the access to the big China market for exports and imports, for technological transfer, for investment, and for having cheap goods. I think that the Chinese workers with their low salaries has done much better and much more to contain inflation than all the central banks together.
Germany, which is considered EU's economic powerhouse, is also supporting the French calls for more protection for European businesses and manufacturers. The German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, has agreed that there needs to be countermeasures similar to the U.S. scheme if Washington refuses to address key concerns voiced by Berlin and Paris.
has publicly said that Europe will have to discuss the Inflation Reduction Act with the U.S., quote, in great depth. Brussels has made it clear that the U.S. legislation to subsidize its own businesses at the expense of its European partners represents a form of economic protectionism that undermines the rules of the World Trade Organization. The move is also seen as a setback for efforts to revive transatlantic relations after years of trade friction with the Donald Trump administration. Officials fear the ongoing transatlantic trade spat surrounding electric vehicles and other goods could overshadow the biannual meeting between Washington and Brussels.
It says that they are all in all on positive track, and it's very important that we are cooperating closely between EU and US as strategic allies, especially in the situation we are facing right now. At the same time, there are also concerns related to the Inflation Reduction Act and its discriminatory provisions. And in this regard, we had set a joint EU-US task force to deal with those issues.
I will be pretty frank. I think in the form how it was presented, I think for the European Union is unacceptable. And we simply expect that we will get the same status as Canada and Mexico. So I think in the form how it was presented is extremely protective against exports from Europe, and we have to clarify it.
European policymakers say the U.S.'s discriminatory trade policies is particularly harmful at a time when the world faces an economic slowdown because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the Ukraine war, and trade bottlenecks.
The economy of the Eurozone and Europe, for that matter, is on the edge. Many European countries are experiencing record inflation and recessions. Now that it is becoming clear that the U.S. is taking advantage of Europe when it comes to the war in Ukraine, what is Europe going to do about it? First off, we have told you how Germany and France have realized this inequality. Germany, Europe's powerhouse, went to China with an economic team to make sure its economic ties with China remains intact. Don't forget, China is Europe's biggest economic partner. In 2021, even though China was the third largest partner for EU exports of goods, 10.2%, it was the largest partner for EU imports of goods, 22.4%. Europe has to act quickly if it wants to prevent the exodus of factories and companies from Europe to the US or elsewhere, since the economies of European countries are tanking. Inflation in the Eurozone is expected to have hit a new record high of 10.7% in October. Italy saw the biggest monthly increase in prices, with inflation jumping from 9.4% in September to 12.8% in October. More than half of the Eurozone countries recorded double-digit inflation rates in October, including Germany, 11.6%, Belgium, 13.1%, and the Netherlands, 16.8%. France showed the lowest rate at 7.1%. Here is a look at the inflation rate in each country in Europe. When it comes to energy, that is the central reason for inflation in many European countries, and there is no sign of relief there for Europe. First, OPEC, led by Saudi Arabia, announced a 2 million barrel per day cut. Then came the warning by Qatar, a gas powerhouse, to the EU. Buy Russian gas, in which Qatar backed off from supplying gas to Europe. It has been told in no uncertain terms that there is no alternative to Russian natural gas supplies unless Europe wants to get devastated or for several winters to come. Qatar has now declared Europe cannot survive without Russian gas. That does it for this segment of the program. Any comments or questions, feel free to send them to us. Contact info is on your screens now.
When it comes to Europe, unfortunately, it has dark days ahead of it. If it continues to have the U.S. lead it down this war path, well, it's going to suffer huge economic losses, something that has obviously started already. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's visit to China is a positive development, one to surely burn the U.S., but whether Europe is going to stand up fully to the U.S., remains to be seen. It's a good starting point, but again, only time will tell. That is it for this edition of the program. For Mika Vitale and the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye. Until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, I'm Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi and we're going to be with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll try to discuss the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Wa la tukhzini yawma yub'athun.
And do not disgrace me on the day they are all resurrected.
يوم لا ينفع مال ولا بنون.
The day when there will not benefit anyone, wealth or children.
إلا من أتى الله بقلب سليم.
But only one who comes to Allah with a sound heart.
Dear listeners, we have reached the 89th verse of this chapter. إِلَّا مَنْ أَتَى اللَّهَ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ Except for him who comes to Allah with a pure heart. This is one other supplication of Prophet Abraham that we will address God willing in this episode. As you were with us, Prophet Abraham started supplicating to his Lord until he reached this part where he said, وَغْفِرْ لِأَبِي إِنَّهُ كَانَ مِنَ الضَّالِّينَ لَا تُخْزِنِي يَوْمَ يُبْعَثُونَ He is really worried about the state of being abased and blamed in hereafter. And he continues describing that day, يَوْمَ لَا يَنْفَعُ مَالٌ وَلَا بَنُونَ إِلَّا مَنْ أَتَى اللَّهَ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ The day whereon neither wealth nor sons will avail, except for him who comes to Allah with a pure heart. In this noble verse, we can see
that this verse implies that the worldly arrangements are not effective in hereafter. As mentioned in the previous one, لَا يَنْفَعُ مَالٌ وَلَا بَنُونَ. So these worldly arrangements, they are not effective, except for the one who is having pure heart. So except for that, nothing is useful here. In other words, this exception is for the one who comes before Allah while he has a sound heart, قَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ. And that is, it is sound from any kind of polytheism. It is sound from any kind of disbelief and pollution of sins. He has a pure spirit, pure heart. In a tradition from the Holy Prophet of Islam, we read that that kind of qalb salim, if you're looking for, is the kind of heart that is free from pollution of polytheism. So that's why the verse says, إِلَّا مَنْ أَتَى اللَّهَ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ. Those wealth and sons will not avail except for the one who comes to Allah with a pure heart.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran
by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So, brothers and sisters, the only capital for salvation in hereafter is a pure heart. And pure heart, as we said, as the tradition said, the pure heart, the sound heart, is the heart in which there is no polytheism. The one who has sincere intention and pure faith, the one who does any righteous deeds without the desire for the other's intention, that is pure heart. A pure heart has no fruit save pure action. So this is the true meaning of purity. In other words, as man's pure heart and spirit is effective in his deeds have also a vast reflection in his heart and spirit. They both affect each other. They change it into the same quality, irrespective of being godly or satanic. So if you try to purify your heart in any aspect of your life, after some time that you train yourself, you will also get help from that kind of pure spirit. You will also get help from that pure heart. إِلَّا مَنْ أَتَى اللَّهَ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ. With pure heart, you will change the scope of your daily routines to hereafter. You will only look forward to doing the actions that are mentioned in the traditions and in the Holy Quran as righteous ones, as the ones bringing you closer to the state of mercy of the Lord. And if you want to be from the ones that are not abased on the day of hereafter, you must have pure heart. And this is the answer, this is the solution to all your worries from the day of hereafter. And this is what the Holy Quran explicitly says from the words of Prophet Abraham. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
The cultivation of an Islamic identity has been our topic. We want to, inside of the heart of our hearts, we want to be a proud Muslim that can identify with the deen. But there are barriers, and one of them I talked about yesterday was internalized Islamophobia. The second barrier that happens when we're trying to establish an Islamic identity is a lack of certainty. Our fourth Imam has a beautiful statement. Allah, when anyone elevates me on the outside, lower me that much on the inside. It's a nice statement. The Imam, of course, has ilm al-ladunni. At the same time, he knows without this purification, very easy. And we have countless examples of people, a little bit of knowledge in the Western world, in the Islamic world, in history, today, you name it. Without that proper tazkiyah, that ilm that should have left you, led you towards God, actually made you satanic in your thoughts and in your actions. Very easily. Worship should be fi sabilillah. Sometimes people like me, we do it fi sabilinnas. I compare my salat when everyone's watching to my salat at home. Oh, zameen asman ka farq hai. Big difference, unfortunately. When the whole world's watching, oh, my qaf and my ayns and my ha come from my stomach, forget my throat. I want to make sure you know I'm saying ayn and ha and hurting my throat saying it. But at home, this riyah is a huge issue in our communities. This over-exaggeration of my own piety for the sake of others. Huge issue. Imam Muhammad Baqir, alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala. He says, because I'll tell you, one of the biggest challenges we have is sincerity. To be truly khulus in everything that we do, oh, it's very hard. He says the highest level of ikhlas is to do something for Allah, and not that you don't want praise. In fact, when praise comes from other than God, it angers you inside of you. People like me do one small good deed, I want 10 shabashes. And 10 thalia, pat me on my back, give me a plaque, tell me I changed your life. The same worship that should be for Allah can easily become an avenue towards shaitan. People go to Hajj and they leave their iman on the Kaaba and they come back. People who, with a lot of pride, say, oh, I've been to Karbala 17 times in my life, Malana, fantastic. They're a horrible human being, I'm sorry. A tragedy, you lose a loved one, it should lead you towards Allah. Many people now actually become the other way. What's the point? Itne namaz, itne dua, I prayed, only to have my husband be taken away from me. What's the point? Chortle, I'm out, forget it. Many, many times. My point is that this path of yaqeen and perfection in Islam is very relative, not absolute. We have to examine what is that path. Now, and also be careful and know that path can lead to shaitan. In my high school days, like 85 years ago, high school days. In my high school, they had a gym, and on the gym, they had a rock climbing wall. Okay, it was the latest thing back then, in the mid-90s. And yes, I joined the rock climbing club, me and a couple of my friends. I used to love it. Every morning, 8 a.m., we would go, and we would begin to climb. And they would tell us, make sure you do this, you do that. A couple of instructions that still stuck with me. Number one is this, that when you face the wall, map out visually your route up the wall. That rock, then this rock, then left leg here, right leg here, before you even start climbing, okay? If you get tired up the wall, stop on a rock and rest for a second. Number three, whatever you do, they would tell me, don't climb down the rock. Climb up the rock. In our journey towards God, whatever your journey is, apply these principles. There are moments where you need to pull over. There are moments where you need to stop and kind of map out your route, that's fine. Maybe you need to kind of stay still for a moment, that's fine. But don't climb down the journey. Don't allow your path, which is for Allah, to become for shaitan. That is the epitome of perfection and yaqeen. So certainty is not the idea that I can't ask questions. It's not. It's that I am able to invest in my path. I understand this path to be so strong that I'm going to invest in it over and over and over again. The sheer nature of faith is to fluctuate. is to ask questions. Up and down, up and down. Nothing wrong with that. But are you able to invest and work through the ups and downs because you believe in that path? That's what I want for you and me. That if I'm going to struggle, go up and down, peaks and valleys, tiring, draining, etc., etc., I'm going to do it on the path of Islam. This deserves my energy in my life. That's the yaqeen I want. Not that the moment the ocean gets a little bit now wavy, I'm out. No. Stay in the ocean, ride out the waves, because you believe in the ocean. This deen is not easy. I'm here to say it's not easy. I'm not delusional. At 16, 70, to submit to a higher power is very difficult. That's why God says, do it within your capacity. One of my favorite traditions of the Holy Prophet is that you worship Allah to the best of your ability. To the best of your ability. He won't get tired of accepting your worship so long as you won't get tired of worshiping Him. Whatever level it is. If that means your whole life you're trying to nail down Fajr, that's okay. If that means that your whole life you're just trying to get to a point you can read one or two verses of the Quran once or twice a week, that's okay. This is not a comparison game. It's a capacity game. What you're able to do is what God will take from you. Don't be like Shaitan. Shaitan played the comparing game. Oh, he's clay, I'm fire. Oh, he's this, he's that. No, God says, look, you have your path. Embrace your path. In your grave, in my grave, I won't be asked based on your amal. You won't be asked based on my amal. Everyone has their own journey. But once you embrace your journey, embrace your journey. Be certain on it. Work towards it. Ride out those times when you are low and fly when you are high. Imam Ali says that when your nawafil interrupt with your wajib, drop the nawafil. Just do what is fara'id on you, what is fard on you, what's wajib on you. Because there'll be moments where even the wajib isn't enough. I want more, so do more at that moment. But there are moments where even that wajib is such a task. Do your wajib, khalas. I get phone calls, right? Malana, I recite Surah Mulk and Surah Rahman, Surah Yasin before bed. Beautiful habit, beautiful. Kabhi kabhi thak jati hu main. I get tired sometimes. I fall asleep in the Quran. Is it okay? Yes, sister, it's okay. It's all right. Don't push yourself. If you have tawfiq, if at that moment now you're able to read with tafsir and translation, mashallah, that's great. If you're tired, it's okay. Sometimes I think we think God wants all or nothing. Absolutely not. He sees you. He sees your struggle. He knows your childhood. He knows your upbringing. He knows your mental health. He knows all these things. He's a loving, compassionate, merciful Lord who wants from you what you can give Him. But give Him your best. If you have questions, if you have doubts, get those doubts answered. Once you have certainty, then that identity begins to develop. Then yeah, you walk around saying, I'm a Muslim. I'm a follower of the Ahlul Bayt. Absolutely.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Matin شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
In the limelight.
While the U.S. regime baselessly accuses other countries of vote rigging, this regime itself has the most undemocratic and unhealthy election in the world. The U.S. has lost face, and American officials cannot hide this issue from the eyes of the world by simply putting a makeup on the face of their politics in their Zionist-controlled media. In this regard, we have provided different media views on this issue. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Global Times wrote, voting for U.S. 2022 midterm elections began officially on November 8, and the elections were more closely contested than public opinion had previously expected. This is an internal U.S. matter, and the outside world has limited interest in its process and results. Nevertheless, the elections have sparked widespread concerns in the international community. To use an analogy, it is like seeing a group fight not far from your home, and you may be hit by a brick thrown out suddenly. Globalization has broken the distance of time and space. In the past 2 years, the destructive spillover effects of the U.S. domestic chaos on the international situation have become increasingly obvious, creating too many troubles. According to the original design of the system, the midterm elections were originally a midterm exam of the ruling party's two-year performance, and the exam questions were mainly about the domestic economy and people's livelihoods. This time, however, the elections were off-topic from the beginning, with the Republican Party still obsessed about whether the result of the presidential election 2 years ago was fair, while the Democratic Party repeatedly made the election a referendum on American democracy. The American people are suffering from the worst inflation in four decades and fears of a recession, but their concerns have been diluted. The two parties have tried their best to incite the kidnap voters with ideological language, which further exacerbates the uncertainty and destructiveness of the elections. U.S. allies are concerned that the changing political landscape in Washington may lead to a reversal of their foreign strategies and public policies. At present, political views of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party on major international issues, such as the Russia-Ukraine crisis and climate change, are distinct, and the relevant decisions made by different parties or even by different people from the same party are vastly different. They do not have two. Nor want to consider the stability and continuity of policies. They not only have no psychological burden when overturning the decisions of their predecessors, but often feel smug. The world has witnessed this kind of manipulation many times, such as U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Agreement, Iran nuclear talks, arms control talks, and related UN agencies. The division of American society and the opposition of political parties have evolved into overall untrustworthiness and capriciousness of the U.S. in international arena. U.S. political system has made policymakers less accountable for irresponsible behaviors. Countries that are regarded as rivals by the U.S. don't expect the rotation of U.S. political parties to smooth ties or bring the U.S. back to pragmatism and rationality. In other words, they hold no illusions. At the same time, these countries are mentally prepared for the possibility that they may become the targets of the U.S. to vent its strong emotions. Ironically, the U.S. has displayed a negative type of certainty in this regard. It has become the biggest source of global instability. It is making the global situation worse by both uncertainties and certainty. Being highly sensitive, capricious, neurotic, and aggressive are all recent symptoms of American democracy. Since the U.S. is a superpower with global influence, when its system is sick, the whole world is inflicted. From the Capitol riot, which shocked the world, to the midterm elections, U.S. domestic political turmoil is still going on after 2 years. The risk of political violence is growing rather than decreasing. Crime rate is going up. Posts on Twitter that mentioned civil war had soared nearly 3,000%. Politicians are competing for who is more aggressive. Not only ordinary Americans are frustrated and anxious about the situation, but the world is also worried about the U.S. A French media outlet asked recently, "Is the American powder keg in danger of exploding?" It shows the outside world's common feeling. The world has another consensus. U.S. political environment will further deteriorate after midterm elections. The U.S. democratic system has been in operation for more than 200 years. Objectively speaking, this alone can be regarded as remarkable. However, practices show that human society has not yet designed a set of perfect political system that can be well applied anywhere once and for all. In other words, there has never been the myth of democracy, nor should people defy American political system. American democracy has come to where it is today, with increasingly obvious drawbacks. To some extent, this is inevitable. American democracy also needs to keep pace with the time. It is worth mentioning that as the quality of American democracy is declining, its cost is soaring. The total cost of 2022 state and federal midterm elections is projected to exceed $16.7 billion. No wonder it's been referred to as the most expensive midterms ever. We have always avoided commenting on the specific details of the U.S. midterm elections. To be honest, this is out of concerns that the U.S. might rascally put the blame on people, accusing them for interfering in U.S. internal affairs. The truth is, countries which have suffered from U.S. interference is their home affairs have no intent, will not, and cannot intervene in U.S. domestic politics. But U.S. politics affects the interest of the whole world. People sincerely hope that the U.S. will settle down as soon as possible. Common Dreams also wrote, regardless of how the races for congressional seats shake out when the vote tallies conclude, the majority of Congress GOP caucus will still be made up of 2020 election deniers. The midterms have largely gone off without much of a hitch, but election deniers and those seeking to suppress the votes of opponents have proven they won't take that sitting down. Regardless of how the races for congressional seats shake out, when the vote tallies conclude, the majority of Congress GOP caucus will still be made up of 2020 election deniers. The recent election lacked the widespread protests, major disruptions, rampant voter intimidation, or even violence that some feared would unfold at the polls. But don't think the threat of voter suppression is over. It's just getting started for this election as well as for 2024. Florida is a case study for how it will be done. If the re-election of Governor Ron DeSantis, one of the most high-profile embracers of 2020 election denialism, wasn't enough to spare fear the efforts to upend the elections will continue, then his move to block federal election monitors from entering polling places in the Sunshine State should. The Department of Justice dispatched monitors to 64 election districts in 24 states, including Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach counties in Florida to ensure compliance with the federal voting laws. 8 Massachusetts communities were also included in that monitoring. It's nothing new. Federal officials have monitored elections since the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965. But in Florida, as well as in Missouri, Republican state officials refused to let monitors inside polling places, citing a state law. But federal law trumps state law. Still, given the Supreme Court's decade-long effort to pull every tooth out of the Voting Rights Act's enforcement powers, DeSantis and others are more emboldened to flout that law than ever. Just consider how successfully he and the Florida GOP gerrymandered election districts to dilute black Floridans' voting power. There were some signs of more traditional voter suppression efforts this week, like in Texas, where black voters were shadowed or asked to say their addresses aloud even after they were checked in by polling officials, a move some voters said put them in fear of retaliation. It took an emergency legal challenge by a local NAACP chapter and resulting court order to allow voters to cast their ballots without interference. But it was clear even before the polls opened that the main voter suppression tools of choice would be baseless legal claims and disinformation. It began weeks ago when many of the same voting districts that proved pivotal in the 2020 presidential election and were subsequently targeted by Donald Trump and other election-denying Republicans were the subject to more frivolous challenges. In Michigan, a ham-handed effort by GOP Secretary of State candidate Christina Caramo to stop absentee ballots that were not obtained in person from being counted, but wait for all, only in Detroit was tossed out of the court before Election Day. But according to New York Times report, another more organized effort by GOP officials, activists, and lawyers in that state has been underway for months. With the aid of people like Celta Mitchell, known for being a central player in Trump's plan to interfere with the 2020 election in Georgia. While similar GOP legal attacks on balloting in Philadelphia didn't prevent biggest statewide wins for Democratic in Pennsylvania, officials there still worry that it will be enough to plant seeds of doubt to sow groundless allegations of election fraud.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Sayyid Naghvi. Sayyid Naghvi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
So on different occasions and in different speeches, the leader of Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has addressed the people talking about resistance against the arrogance or istikbar and the arrogant powers. So it seems that this concept, I mean resistance and muqawama, is an Islamic concept which is very much rooted in the religion of Islam, but unfortunately is not practiced by so many Muslim lands today. What is the reason, Shaykh?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, as you rightly mentioned, resistance against arrogance, against oppression, is the thing that should be practiced by the true believers, because not only Islam, but also the previous religions, all the prophets, they resisted against arrogance, mm-hmm. against oppression. Look, for example, the Prophet Ibrahim alayhi salatu wassalam. Yes. So he resisted against Nimrud.
Yes.
And Prophet Nuh, Musa alayhi salatu wassalam. So, of course, he also resisted against Pharaoh.
Yes.
So, and also the other prophets.
Also
so
Prophet Jesus Christ.
Exactly, you know, yeah.
Acted against injustice.
Yeah, because of this he was crucified.
Yes, yes.
And so this is the same thing that was practiced by the Prophet, the last Prophet, the seal of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. And of course, now the followers of the Prophet has this, all of them have this responsibility to resist against any kind of arrogance and oppression mm-hmm. in their lives and their times, as Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam resisted against yes. Yazid as a tyrant, yes. as a, let's say, oppressor, king of that time. So, of course, as it is mentioned by the Supreme Leader, that resistance is a must that should be mm-hmm. performed, that should be yes. practiced by the true Muslims.
And what are the criteria in order to understand what is arrogance and oppression? I mean, for example, injustice could be one of the standards. What about the other ways?
Yeah, the problem is that unfortunately nowadays the superpowers in our world, they actually level a kind of discrimination mm-hmm. against certain nations in the world. Because of this, to fight against this discrimination in the whole world, then of course the nations, the different countries, they do not have any other choice.
Yes.
They have to resist.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they will be eliminated from
yes.
the world.
Yes.
This is the reality of our world. Look, for example, these colonialistic powers in the history.
Yes.
Sometimes they eliminated the whole, let's say, residents and yes. inhabitants of different lands.
Especially the natives of those
exactly
lands.
Exactly, in right. Australia and Canada yes, yes. and Africa and many other yes. areas. So this is the thing that they want.
Mm-hmm.
So if a nation do not resist or does not resist, then what is the other choice? What is that's the other right. option? There's no any other option. But of course, if there is justice, mm-hmm. if these superpowers accept that they distribute, for example, the properties of the nations, of the world, justly among all the nations, of course, in that case, there will be no fighting, no battle, no problem.
Yes.
But the problem is that the arrogant power do not do this.
Mm-hmm.
They want all the properties, all the sources, the resources of the earth for themselves.
That's right.
So then the other nations, the poor nations, what should they do?
Okay, that's all right.
This is the point, yeah.
Thank you very much. And according to the leader's speech, the epitome of the istikbar today is the USA, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, and of course the other countries around and its allies. But it's mostly, usually we can say that's all right. The epitome is called the US. Why the US? Because the US is not... is not a big civilization. Maybe less than 500 years it aged as a new country. But nowadays, why? After 5 centuries, it could be the epitome of arrogance in the world.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, when we look at the history, we see that it is the U.S. after the Soviet Union
mm-hmm.
who came into the power and who declared itself as a superpower.
Yes.
On top of that, there is a concept which is known as capitalization
yes.
or capitalism.
Yes.
The concept of capitalism is a concept in which if you look at different fields, you will find why the Supreme Leader has said so about the USA. Number one, when you look at the person who commits crime in any other country, according to capitalism, he should not be put into jail or accountable for what he has done, or he cannot face the judiciary of that country, and he has to go back to U.S.
Yes, okay.
Because he has a high status.
Yes.
He's from a superpower country,
mm-hmm.
and his rights will be, you know, taken care in the, yes. in the U.S. So where does this rule has come from?
Mm-hmm.
If someone is killing, for example, we have seen in Pakistan,
yes.
in Iran, in yes, other yes, countries, yes. U.S. citizens used to kill people, and no one was saying nothing to them.
One of the we can say complaints of the late Imam Khomeini against the U.S. citizens and officials in Iran was that the U.S. and the American dogs, you know, lives were more important than the lives of the Iranian people. Yes, yes. And he was against this, and he declared it, you know, directly to the Shah of Iran on that time.
So we have seen this many examples, like in the history. What happened to Vietnam?
Yes.
Why the atomic bomb was dropped in yes. Hiroshima.
Yes.
So all these things shows that this is a satanic power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he called them Satan,
yes.
Or the big Satan.
Yes.
So this was the reason. The reason is when you look at a person or a country or a government or a system, you need to define that thing. And when we look at about the characteristics which they had, all the characteristics which we can say a satanic power can have, these are found in the U.S. at this time. So the U.S. officials, and we are talking about the U.S. System or the government right now, not
yes.
the people. So people can be innocent, they don't know about things, but the officials, the government, obviously, they are committing these sins and these things.
The people are also, we can say, grown up under such thinking system.
Yes, obviously.
Isn't it?
Yes.
In the schools, in the... of course, Satan is everywhere, I do want to say, but somehow... The people are also grown up by this system, which is somehow invisible. I mean, the hidden hands behind the scene are controlling.
But there might
the
be
powers.
Some people who are against these things. When
okay.
you tell them about the facts, they say we didn't know about the facts.
Yes.
So the other point is, like, generally people, they are unaware of the facts.
Yes.
They know the things which are shown in the media, in the newspaper.
Hmm.
And you know that the news is showing the fake
yes,
news.
Yes.
They're showing the things which the governments... You know, they allow them, or maybe, you know, their agencies, they allow them. Otherwise, they cannot do that.
Okay.
For example, in the U.S., in Britain, in any part of the world, if a newscaster or anyone talks about the Holocaust,
mm-hmm.
he's fired immediately.
Yes. Yes, yes.
So what kind of freedom is there?
Mm-hmm.
So we see that these are the actions which we see from them.
That's all right. Even they are joking, for example, in the ceremonies that if you win an Oscar... Just do a Holocaust movie.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. Okay. That's all right. So, but it seems that for so many Muslim lands nowadays, this concept of Muqawama has been forgotten because according to what they say, they claim that we can't say the geopolitical criterions of today's world are different, so you have to cooperate, or it's better to say interact with the other countries, even the superpowers. What's your answer to that, Sheikh?
You know, of course, it goes to the national interests of different countries and different nations that is defined by their governments. And the governments sometimes define their own national interests in a way that might be opposed to the Islamic beliefs,
values.
To the Islamic principles.
Although they must be Muslim states too.
Yeah,
Islamic states, okay.
Though they are Muslims.
Yes, yes.
But in a way they practice in their political affair of their lives, it seems that it is not that much, let's say, incompatible with the Islamic teachings
yes.
and doctrines. This is the problem. Otherwise, they should not actually cooperate with the arrogant powers, with the oppressors, because, of course, what they want, that is for themselves, not for these nations. And also the historical pieces of evidence show that even those countries that they cooperated or supported or helped this power, they did not gain anything.
Yes.
And finally, all the things went to those countries,
yes.
to those superpowers.
Yes.
That is why it is better for all the Muslim nations to gather together and to, let's say, cooperate among themselves
yes.
to make a kind of Islamic unity,
mm-hmm.
to reestablish the new Islamic civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the best for Muslims,
yes.
to have their own civilization.
And do you think they have been successful up to now?
If they finally find,
okay.
Come to this conclusion that they have to establish this Islamic civilization, they
uh-huh.
would do that.
Yes.
Yeah, because Islam has this capability to reestablish this kind of new civilization.
That's right.
But the problem is that nowadays, unfortunately, many of the kings, leaders,
Salafian yes.
of Islamic countries, they are educated in these modern educational systems, in modern universities, in Western universities.
Yes.
So that their mindset and their viewpoints and their worldview is a kind
yes.
of modern and westernized kind of worldview.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the way that they look at the world, at their own benefits, interests, this is different from what Islam says.
That's all right.
This is the problem. That
okay.
we have nowadays, yes.
So how is it possible to consider America as the big Satan in today's world and not interact with this big power in industry, in economics? You have to be very much rich in terms of your independence, isn't it, Sayyid? Is it possible?
Well, obviously it is possible. Why? Because when we see the dealings that are happening in today's world, especially by the, you know, after the incidents of Ukraine and Russia, what's happening between them,
yes,
we can see a new power or the business, we can say, like, structure has been made in the world. Many countries are thinking to deal in euro rather than in USD.
Mm-hmm.
Dollar.